Well, this morning we begin a short series called Who Do You Think You Are? So come with me, please, to Genesis chapter 49. Now, Jacob is on his deathbed. He calls for his 12 sons, and we read verse 1. And Jacob called his sons and said, "Gather together that I may tell you what shall befall you in the last days. Gather together and hear, you sons of Jacob, and listen to Israel, your father." So can you see the scene? Here's the great patriarch, Jacob. He's surrounded by his sons. And he's standing on the threshold of eternity. His departure is at hand. These are his final words before he closes his eyes on this world forever. So what will he say? Well, he speaks to each son in turn. And in a few pithy words, he evaluates each son, and he sums up their character. And then he applies the lesson not just to the son, but to his descendants after him. Now, who are these sons of Jacob? Well, they're the fathers of the 12 tribes of Israel. And so the characteristics possessed by the son will be worked out in the tribe that bears his name. The strengths and weaknesses of each son will be inherited, for better, for worse, by their descendants. So the descendants of Reuben will never rise higher than their father. The descendants of Judah will possess those qualities which make him first among his brothers. And so on. So Jacob, Israel, that's his name, the name God gave to him. He looks at each son in turn. He evaluates. And he speaks. But look again at verse 1. "Gather together that I may tell you what shall befall you in the last days." What does he mean by the last days? Well, he's simply saying from the tribe's inception to the coming of the kingdom of God in power. So do you see? These are not just the sort of canny insights of a wise old man. Jacob, as he speaks as a prophet. He's foretelling the things that are to come. He's here today, but his eyes look into the distance. The things that will come to the tribes. Well, what's all that got to do with you and me? Well, okay. In spiritual terms, we are the children of Israel. That's how the Bible describes us. That's how the New Testament describes us. The people of God, those who fled to Jesus Christ, whether they're Jews or Gentiles, they are the children of Israel. They are the true Israel. They are, if you like, the 12 tribes. Now, of course, we're not Reuben or Issachar or Zebulun. But the range of characters found among the 12 sons will be found in this church. And the roundedness and the variety that's on display in this family of Jacob and their descendants after them will be on display in this local expression of Israel. So, Christian friends, by looking at this Israel, these 12 sons and their descendants after them, don't be surprised if you see yourself. By understanding who they are, maybe you'll better understand who you are and the part that God has given you to play in the church and beyond. Now we need to know, are you called to lead the people of God? Then you must be a Judah. And if you're a Joseph, blessed, fruitful, capable, someone who gets things done, is that you? Then understand, you can make a church, or you can tear a church apart. And if you're a Simeon, or a Levi, well, no more than one of you for a small church, and if it's a bigger church, then you can have a scattering of Simeons and Levites. And what about Gads? Why is it that some Christians have such a hard time of it all through their pilgrimage? Well, praise God for the Ashers. And oh, we pray for more Naphtalis in the church. And Christian friend, if you find yourself under a yoke that's not of your choosing, well, maybe that's because God knows that you're an Issachar. And are you a Benjamin? You're always on the go, full of zeal, full of energy. Well, make sure that it's always in submission to Judah, and so on, and so on, and so on. These things will come out as we go through this short series. So who do you think you are? Well, we'll start with the eldest three sons, Reuben, Simeon, and Levi. They're all sons of Leah. I dare say there's a bit of each of these sons in us, but it might be more in some people than in others. Well, let's find out. So we have three sons and 2 points. So point number one, let's look at Reuben. What does Jacob say to Reuben? Verse 3. Reuben, you are my firstborn, my might, and the beginning of my strength, the excellency of dignity, and the excellency of power. So as the eldest son, Reuben, he carries the hopes and dreams of his father. My might and the beginning of my strength. Reuben, as the firstborn, was uniquely to display all that was best in his father. At least that was his father's hope. He says, you're the first fruits of my virility. That's the sense of what he says. And we know what Jacob means, don't we? He's a dad. He's watching his son play football. Now, secretly, dad's always fancied himself as a footballer. It's just that the ball never fell kindly for him. But there he is watching his son play football. And when his 9-year-old scores, dad thinks to himself, ah, that's my boy. And judging from the goal celebration that dad gives, you think that dad would have scored. My might and the beginning of my strength. Yeah, he doesn't get his footballing skills from his mother. That's my boy. So do you see how Jacob felt about Reuben? Uniquely, he's the firstborn, the eldest son, and he's carrying the expectation of his father on his shoulders. Verse 3, the excellency of dignity and the excellency of power. Reuben was to have pride of place. Reuben, empowered to lead the dynasty. Reuben, inheritor of the birthright and all that that meant. Reuben, oh, what hopes rested upon his shoulders. But what happened? It all came to nothing. Why? Well, look at verse 4. Unstable as water, you shall not excel. Because you went up to your father's bed, then you defiled it, he went up to my couch. Reuben did something his dad could never forget. And looking at Reuben, Jacob says to him, you went up to your father's couch. You defiled it. And then, as it were, lifting his eyes to look at all his sons, as if to say, can you believe it? Jacob adds, he went up to my couch. You of all people, Reuben, my firstborn. Now, what is Jacob talking about? Well, just turn back a few pages. Genesis chapter 35, verse 22. This is what he's talking about. Genesis 35, verse 32. And it happened when Israel dwelt in that land that Reuben went and lay with Bilhah, his father's concubine. And Israel heard about it. Just one verse. But it tells us all that we need to know about the sort of man that Reuben was. Reuben sleeps with Jacob's concubine, Bilhah. She's Rachel's maid. She's the mother of Dan and Naphtali. And he lies with her on his father's bed. Now, just what was Reuben thinking? How could he? Now, Christian friends, was it just lust? Did Reuben simply yield to temptation? Had he had his eye on Bilhah for some time, now is his opportunity, and he takes it. Well, maybe it is that. Maybe it is just lust. But maybe it's more. Remember, he's the firstborn. So was this a clumsy attempt to seize prematurely the leadership of the family? After all, do you remember, when Absalom seeks to overthrow his father, what does he do? Well, the first thing that Absalom does is sleep with David's concubines to show that succession has now passed from David to Absalom, that now Absalom is the leader. So maybe that's what Reuben was up to. It's a clumsy attempt to secure the succession. Things have now passed from Jacob, his father, now to the firstborn. And sleeping with his concubine is the expression of that. But maybe it's something even more. Perhaps this is Reuben's bizarre attempt to hold a warring family together. After all, Reuben's birth was an attempt to bring a divided family together. No need to turn to it. But we're told when Reuben is born, this is what happens. So Leah conceived and bore a son, and she called his name Reuben. Why did she call him Reuben? For she said, "The Lord has surely looked on my affliction. Now, therefore, my husband will love me." When Leah has Reuben, she says, "Now I have a son. Now my husband will love me. Now I have a son that will unite this divided family." And people still think like that today, don't they? If we have a child, it will rescue our marriage. And that's Leah's sense. Now I've got a son, it'll rescue this loveless marriage. Jacob will love me now. Well, maybe Leah had said that and told that to Reuben as he was growing up, why he was born. That he was born to bring a family together. And maybe that's gone deep into his consciousness and he's, as it were, carrying on that family tradition. As a future leader of the family, and it's a terribly divided family, it's a warring family, it's full of tensions and divisions. Maybe as future leader, as the firstborn, I can pull everyone together. A grand gesture to unite the factions by having a son through Bilhah. The son of Leah fathering a child through Rachel's maid. And after all, Rachel is now dead. Who knows? Maybe that was in his reasoning. But whatever the underlying reason for going up and lying with Bilhah, it said everything about Reuben, about his unfitness to lead this family. Reuben, you are my firstborn, my might and the beginning of my strength, the excellency of dignity and the excellency of power. Unstable as water, you shall not excel. Unstable as water. Now look at this glass. How would you describe the water that is in it? Is the water in this glass safe? Well, it's safe in that glass as long as it remains in that glass, isn't it? As long as it's in the glass, I know what the water's going to do. As long as it's in the glass, I can leave this glass here in full view of everyone. And it's safe. Nothing's going to happen. But what would happen if I took the glass and tipped the water out? I shan't, but what would happen? What happens if the water leaves the safety of the glass? If it's free to do what it wills, what then? Well, free from restrictions, if the water is let loose, it will cause trouble. It's inherently unstable, isn't it? You can't build on water. It's unstable. Who knows what it might do? And if you've ever had a flood, then you'll know of the destructive power of water. And someone else is going to have to clear up the mess. Do you see what Jacob is saying? Reuben, unstable as water, you shall not excel. As long as Reuben's in a safe environment, as long as he's protected, as long as you'd like you put him in a glass, fine. But put Reuben in charge, leave him free to lead, let him out of his container, and it's a disaster. When he tried to lead, what happened? You went up to your father's bed, you defiled it, he went up to my couch. when in the exercise of leadership he thinks it's a smart thing to sleep with Bilhah, then you know you've got problems. This man can cause havoc. He's unstable. He's not fit to lead, and others will have to clear up the mess. He's a man who's got no control over himself. He's not safe. So keep him away from leadership. But we can push this further. Because this expression, unstable as water, could also mean to bubble and to boil. To boil up like a geezer. Now you know what a geezer is. It's not an old man. It's a hot spring that at regular intervals throws up a tall column of hot water. Yes? Have you ever seen a geezer? I've only ever seen a film of a geezer go, but when you just seeing a film of it, it looks and sounds impressive. This great jet of boiling, steaming water. It all looks very impressive. It's noisy. But it comes to nothing. And that's Reuben. Weak men have a geezer-like quality. From time to time, they try to assert themselves. And there's a show of strength. But it all comes to nothing. So look at chapter 37. Chapter 37, the brothers have ganged up on Joseph. They want Joseph dead. Who steps in to rescue his young brother? It's the firstborn. It's the one who should be leading. Reuben. And so we read chapter 37, verse 19. Here the brothers speaking, they said to one another, look, this dreamer is coming. Here comes Joseph. Come, therefore, let us now kill him and cast him into some pit, and we shall say some wild beast has devoured him, and we shall see what becomes of his dreams. But Reuben heard it, and he delivered him out of their hands and said, let us not kill him. And Reuben said to them, shed no blood, but cast him into this pit, which is in the wilderness, and do not lay a hand on him, that he might deliver him out of their hands and bring him back to his father. So it's a show of strength, isn't it? Leave him alone. You think, well done, Reuben, you've saved the day. That's leadership. Only what happens? It comes to nothing, because a little while later on, when the brothers sell Joseph to the Ishmaelites, Reuben is nowhere to be seen. Reuben, they're about to sell Joseph. Where are you? A little bit earlier, a grand gesture rescues his brother, but he fails to follow it through. He doesn't finish what he began. And of course, he only turns up later when the deal is done, verse 29. Then Reuben returned to the pit, and indeed, Joseph was not in the pit. And he tore his clothes, and he returned to his brothers and said, the lad is no more, and I, where shall I go? Do you see, he's unstable as water. When the battle was hottest, when there was a need to show leadership, Reuben's gone AWOL, absent without leave. He rescued Joseph, but he wasn't there to see it through and to keep him safe. He's just like a geezer. All that show, but it comes to nothing. And in fact, just like water, Reuben takes the shape of his circumstances. He just then falls in with the other brothers and goes along with what they decide. Look at chapter 42. There was again see this geezer-like quality of Reuben. The brothers, they now have to return to Egypt to buy grain. This time they have to take Benjamin with them. And it's all too much for Dad. Chapter 42, verse 36. And Jacob, their father, said to them, you have bereaved me. Joseph is no more. Simeon is no more. And you want to take Benjamin? All these things are against me. Well, who steps in? It's the firstborn, a show of leadership. Verse 37, then Reuben spoke to his father. So now he's going to speak and reassure his father. He's going to comfort him. He's going to take the lead. Come on, Reuben, what are you going to say? Then Reuben spoke to his father, saying, kill my two sons if I do not bring him back to you. Put him in my hands, and I will bring him back to you. What a stupid thing to say. Just like a geezer, isn't it? He blows hot. High on emotion. A great big noisy gesture. But it's utterly, utterly useless. These are the words of a weak man. Trying to do what he can't do. Look, Dad, if I don't bring Ben back, then kill your grandsons. That's a great help, Reuben, isn't it? That's real good family advice there. We can all lean and rest easy in our beds on account of that. You can't leave Reuben in charge, can you? He's as unstable as water. He's just not safe. He's not in control of himself. He's not in control of anything. If you leave Reuben in charge, it will end in tears and someone else is going to be left to clear up the mess. So do you see, do you get the sense of who this man is? He's a weak, irresolute man. He feels he should lead, but he's not qualified to lead. He wants respect, but he can't command respect. He asserts himself, which is what often weak men do. But of course, as a weak man, it all comes to nothing. He's weak, impulsive, intemperate, unstable as water. Reuben has a sign over his desk. It says, "The buck stops here." H-E-R-E. But when he's needed, he's added a few new letters. E-L-S-E-W. The buck stops elsewhere. That's what he's like. Leave it with me. When you need to leave it with him, oh, give it to somebody else. So keep Reuben in a container, and you're all right. He's safe. Let him out. Let him take charge. Unstable as water, you shall not excel. And that's why, although the birthright should be his, Jacob doesn't give it to him. He's not to have leadership of this family. And that's why the tribe of Reuben never, ever rose to prominence. They're just like their father. You look at the tribe of Reuben, they don't produce any prophets, any judges, any leaders. They do, in Numbers chapter 16, plan a coup against Moses. That was a Reuben-like thing to do. We'll take charge. And they blow up, and it all comes to nothing. And they do, in Judges chapter 5, promise to Barak and Deborah that we'll not let you down, we'll be there. When the crisis breaks and war is here, and now we're looking for men to be men, and courage and leadership and manliness must be to the fore, Reuben is nowhere to be seen. And Deborah sings and says, she says, "Among the divisions of Reuben, there were great resolves of heart. Yes, we'll be there to fight the battle. We'll be there with you. We won't let you down. Why did you sit among the sheepfolds? To hear the pipings for the flocks, the divisions of Reuben have great searchings of heart." Great resolves, just like this geezer going off, but it all comes to nothing. Unstable as water, you shall not excel. So, Christian friends, what of us? Do you aspire to lead? Good. Do you feel it's your birthright? Okay. Do you exercise any form of leadership in the church now? And are we looking for more leaders? Well, Reuben is only one side of the coin. I mean, you look at Judah and others, but that's for another day. But just looking at Reuben, Christian friends, gifts, privileges, potential are not enough. Reuben, you're my firstborn. My might and the beginning of my strength, the excellency of dignity and the excellency of power, such privileges, opportunities, hopes, everything's resting on his shoulders, but unstable as water, you shall not excel. When it comes to leadership, what are we looking for? Stability. Water is not safe unless it is contained. So, Christian friend, are you safe? Are you safe to let loose? Are you a safe pair of hands? Are you self-controlled? How can you rule over others if you can't rule over yourself? Are you temperate? No geezer-like quality. Are you temperate? Reliable? Resolute? In other words, you'll see it through. Or is it when something's given to you, other people have got to see it through? Can things be left safely in your hands? Are you there when you're needed? When the crisis comes, when difficulties arise, when people are needed, are you there? Or is it that for all your words, great resolves and all the things you've said, when it comes to the crunch, no one can find you? Does the buck stop with you? Are you the sort of person who clears up other people's messes? Or is it that other people have to clear up your mess? And no geezer-like gestures. Sudden action, a show of strength, an explosion of heat and noise that then comes to nothing. Unstable as water. Do you take the shape of your situation? You say all the right things, but in the end you just go along with it. Or do you take the lead in a situation and stick by the principle and carry it through? Are you only useful when you're contained, but you can't be let loose? Reuben, do you aspire to leadership? Then look at Reuben. Examine yourself. Who do you think you are? And I wonder, I just throw this in, I'm not making a great play of it, but I just wonder. A number of these sons have difficulty with women, as we shall see. Reuben's the only one, though, where specific mention is made of it. You went up to your father's bed, then you defiled it, he went up to my couch. I wonder, is part of the dynamic of weak men, how their weakness is showed, how their weakness is displayed, their relationship with women? I wonder, just leave that with you. So Reuben, who do you think you are? Point number two, more quickly, Simeon and Levi, we're going to take them together for obvious reasons. Verse 5, Simeon and Levi are brothers. Well, that's a funny thing to say, isn't it? Because they're all brothers. What does Jacob mean? Simeon and Levi, your brothers. It means that Simeon and Levi are too alike for comfort. They have the same nature, the same temperament, the same outlook. They're twins, as it were. Now, you fancy a glass of lime juice. So you pour in your lime cordial, you add the water, you take the drink, and it's lovely, refreshing. But what if you put in a double measure? Double the concentration, double the strength of lime juice, and then you... It sets all your teeth on it, doesn't it? It's too much. And Simeon and Levi together are double strength. Double the concentration. It's too much. Because what happens when they act together? Verse 5. Simeon and Levi are brothers. Instruments of cruelty or instruments of violence are in their dwelling place. Now what's Jacob referring to? Well, he's referring to the Dinah incident. If you turn with me back to Genesis chapter 34. Their sister Dinah, she's abducted and she's raped by Shechem. So what does Simeon and Levi do? Well, they feign friendship. They say to Shechem, they say, oh yes, you know, you can marry our sister, that's fine. Marry Dinah, provided that you and your people are circumcised. We're happy for that relationship to go on if you're circumcised. And Shechem takes them at their word. He believes it is a genuine peace offer from Simeon and Levi. He persuades the men of the city to be circumcised. Chapter 34, verse 21. He says, these men are at peace with us. Therefore, let them dwell in the land and trade in it, For indeed the land is large enough for them. Let us take their daughters to us as wives, and let us give them our daughters. Only on this condition will the men consent to dwell with us, to be one people, if every male among us is circumcised as they are circumcised. So Simeon and Levi say, you can have our sister, you can marry her, it's fine, just make sure that you and your people are circumcised. And Shechem takes them at their word, he keeps his side of the agreement. Shechem and the men of the city are circumcised. He acts, if you like, righteously, only then for Simeon and Levi to wreak a terrible vengeance. Verse 25, now it came to pass on the third day when they were in pain, so here are men that have been circumcised, they're not in any position to start fighting, when they were in pain, that the two sons of Jacob, Simeon and Levi, Dinah's brothers, each took his sword and came boldly upon the city and killed all the males. And they killed Hamor and Shechem his son with the edge of the sword and took Dinah from Shechem's house and went out. The sons of Jacob, so the other sons now join in, came upon the slain, plundered the city because their sister had been defiled. They took their sheep, their oxen, their donkeys that was in the city and what was in the field and all their wealth. All their little ones and their wives they took captive and they plundered even all that was in the houses. Then Jacob said to Simeon and Levi, you have troubled me. Do you see? They may have been incensed by what Shechem does to their sister. And rightly so. He's abducted her. He's raped her. And they may at first have been filled with righteous anger. And rightly so. But when they get together, the more they talked about it, the more their anger twisted into something cruel and vindictive and brutal and murderous. And says Jacob, I want nothing to do with you. Verse 6, let not my soul enter their council, let not my honour be united to their assembly, for in their anger they slew a man, and in their self-will they hamstrung an ox. Hamstrung an ox is just simply emblematic of the sort of men that they were. They didn't just go in there and kill all the males and destroy this community. They destroyed all they couldn't carry away with them. They couldn't take the oxes with them, so, well, if we can't have them, nobody else can have them. In other words, it shows when they hamstrung the oxes, it shows that here were brothers who didn't know when to stop. If they can't have it, then no one else can have it. And Jacob says, verse 7, cursed be their anger, for it is fierce, and their wrath, for it is cruel. When you put these men together, it's double the strength, double the concentration, and you've got trouble. Their sense of justice turns to something cruel, violent, uncontrolled. It doesn't know when to stop. And therefore it lays waste to all that's around it. So what happens? Verse 7, I will divide them in Jacob and scatter them in Israel. In other words, says Jacob, Levi and Simeon are not safe to leave together. They must be diluted. Because they stir each other up to the ruin and sorrow of all around them. I will divide them in Jacob and scatter them in Israel. And that's what happened. What happened to the tribe of Simeon? Well, Joshua chapter 19, verse 1, Simeon is dispersed, seated, if you like, inside the much larger tribe of Judah. And after King Asa, 2 Chronicles chapter 15, we don't hear any more of Simeon. Simeon, as it were, disappears from the page. And Levi, what becomes of Levi? Well, Levi becomes the priestly tribe. And what happens to the priestly tribe? It's scattered, isn't it? All through the other tribes. And you read about it in Joshua chapter 21, verses 1 to 3. You can't leave them together. You've got to scatter and disperse them. So again, Christian friend, what of us? Well, two things. Simeon and Levi are brothers. Now, most believers, when you put them together, it's a case of iron sharpening iron. You can take two blunt iron bits of metal, and if you keep striking them against each other, these two blunt pieces of metal will get sharper and sharper and sharper. That's what most Christians are like. But sometimes you get two believers who are so alike, they think in exactly the same way, and they have in them a particular weakness, and they both have that same weakness, and they get on so well, Simeon and Levi are brothers, that any grievance that they may have spirals out of control. They stir each other up. And what once might have been righteous anger, an acute sense of justice, which is good and to the glory of God, because they're together, that sense of righteous anger, that sense of justice, talking together, thinking together, talking together, thinking together, what happens is it loses all proportion. And Simeon and Levi join forces and go to war. And being the men that they are, they don't know when to stop. And if you get them together in a church, they can lay a peaceful church to waste. And I've seen it happen. I'm sure you've seen it happen too. Cursed be their anger, for it is fierce, and their wrath, for it is cruel. I will divide them in Jacob and scatter them in Israel. So what does God do with the Levites and the Simeons? He scatters them. If it's a small church, he'll only give them one. Maybe they've got troubles if they get two. And if it's a bigger church, well, he'll give them several Simeons and Levites, but only a few. And he scatters them in a bigger church. So, Christian friend, how do you react to wrongs and injustices? You may have a very finely tuned sense of justice. Well, that's good, isn't it? But how do you react to wrongs and injustices? Do you nurse grievances? Do you say, when things happen, I must speak to so-and-so? Because you're a Levi and they're a Simeon. And you know that when you share it with them, they'll feel exactly the same way as you do. Well, be very, very careful. Righteous anger, an acute sense of what's right and what's wrong, can all too easily escalate into fierce anger and cruel wrath. And being the person that you are, you won't know when to stop. You'll overstep the mark. You'll go too far. And Christian friends, is that why sometimes you feel strongly about something and you go to talk to somebody else and they don't feel the same way as you do? And you've put it down to the fact that they're unspiritual and you're spiritual about it. No. It's that God has scattered you in Israel. And that's why you can't find someone who feels the same way as you do about it. God has done that deliberately. Because the church doesn't need a double dose, a double strength, a double concentration. Simeon and Levi are brothers. But let's close on a high note. Who's the most famous Levite leader of all? It's Moses, isn't it? And what does he do when he rescues an Israelite from injustice? Oh, he does a Levite thing. He goes over the top, doesn't he? Exodus chapter 2, verse 12. There's this Israelite getting a thrashing from an Egyptian. Moses is a Levite. What does he do? He does a Levite thing. So he looked this way and that. And when he saw no one, he killed the Egyptian and hid him in the sand. He goes over the top, doesn't know when to stop. But then if you trace through Moses' life, okay, God puts him in a wilderness then for 40 years, doesn't he? Out of the way. Those Levite qualities which are in Moses, because he is a Levite, they're redeemed, they're changed, they're used for good. And this man of fierce anger becomes the meekest of men, the meekest man who ever lived. But when you hear him pray, actually you realize he's lost none of his sense of justice. Time and time again, his petitions with God are on the basis of what is just. But you see, now, that finely tuned sense of justice, it's turned to the good of his people and for the glory of God. He turns it into petitions. He takes it to the only one it's safe with, God himself. And you see, we need Levites. The church needs its Levites. Because a little bit later on, just a few verses on, okay, Moses has gone over the top, he's killed an Egyptian, but then he comes to these girls in Midian, they're shepherd girls, and they get kicked off from the well by these rough lads. And who sticks up for the shepherd girls? Then the shepherds came, drove the girls away, but Moses stood up and helped them and watered their flock. That's when you need a Levite. He's going to stand up for what's true and good. He's not going to put up with this injustice. And he's big enough and strong enough to take his stand. And so the reason why, now a positive reason, why God scatters his Levites in the churches is because every church needs its Levites. Now later on, just turn to it, we're nearly at close, Exodus 32. The whole nation, well, some of the nation, is going off the rails. We're at Sinai. What does Israel do? They start worshipping the golden calf. And it's more than just getting up and dancing. There's immorality breaking out. It's awful. It's appalling. The whole nation appears to be going off the rails in the worship of the golden calf. Who rallies to Moses' call? Exodus 32, verse 26. And Moses stood in the entrance of the camp and said, "Whoever is on the Lord's side, come to me." So who are the ones who are outraged with Moses? Who are the ones who have a fine sense of justice that this is wrong and it must be dealt with? Who rallies to his call? And all the sons of Levi gathered themselves together to him. And he said to them, "Thus says the Lord God of Israel, let every man put his sword on his side and go in and out from the entrance, sorry, from the entrance to entrance throughout the camp, and let every man kill his brother, and every man his companion, and every man his neighbor." So the sons of Levi did according to the word of Moses, and about 3,000 men of the people fell that day. Excuse me. Then Moses said, "Consecrate yourselves today to the Lord, that he may bestow on you a blessing this day, for every man has opposed his son and his brother." Do you see now why you need a Levite? Because that fierce anger which can destroy, now by God's grace, becomes a righteous anger that saves the day. You needed men who wouldn't draw back, who would go through the camp and deal with these idolaters and these immoral people, who could take the whole nation away from the Lord. Strong action is needed. Firm, resolute action is needed. And the Levites rally to the call, and they rescue the day. And how many churches have there been which have been going astray, going away from their biblical moorings, or allowing immorality and sin to take hold in the church, and those churches have been brought back and rescued by the courageous stand of the Levites among them. People who weren't easygoing about it, because they saw that the Lord's glory was at stake and would do what needed to be done. Every church needs its Levite. If it's a bigger church, it needs a number of them, but not too many. So what's the key that makes a Levite useful? What does Moses say? He says, "Whoever is on the Lord's side, come to me." The first thing that's needed is a submission to faithful biblical leadership. So when the Levites go it alone, you've got problems. They come and stand with Moses. They submit themselves to the leadership. They follow through what they should do. And the second thing that makes them useful is a refusal to pursue a personal vendetta, a refusal to pursue a personal agenda, rather to rally to the Lord's side. "Whoever is on the Lord's side, come to me." And all the sons of Levi gather themselves together to him. That's their call. That's the trigger. They rally when it's the Lord's side. So Reuben, Simeon, Levi, who do you think you are?